Brian Haney.
And I would, like, lip-sync to their music. As embarrassing as this sounds, I'm pretty self-deprecating, but I would, like, have the hairbrush as my microphone, and I'd be, you know, jamming out.
He's jamming out in Tulsa right now. Brian Haney, the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, the number one seed in the Midwest. And Brian's appearance brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. It's Tulsa time, right, Brian?
That's right. Excited to be down here and hopefully a chance to be back in Kansas City next week if everything breaks right. But it's a pretty nicely paved geographic path if they can go down it and make it all the way to Phoenix.
I'm sure you're hanging out with Coach Self. He's showing you all the great places there in Tulsa. It's probably changed a little bit since he was the head coach there.
You know what? We haven't exactly gone down the memory road, Bill Self tour with Coach. He's kind of busy, but I did get to have a drink with his childhood best friend last night who came over from Edmond and hear some old Bill Self stories. And he says he's the same guy today that he was then in terms of the way he treats people, and that we're truly lucky to have such a humble and gregarious guy. And I completely agree. So that's been kind of fun. I'm sure he's going to have a ton of friends and family come tomorrow night and Sunday as well at the game.
All right, so KU is the number one seed. Of course, losing to TCU in the first round of the Big 12 tournament or the quarterfinal round, Josh Jackson suspended, did not play. How much stock do we put into that loss for KU? Can we spin it to a positive angle and maybe a blessing in disguise, or is there reason to be concerned after that loss?
You know, I really don't put a whole lot of stock in it at all, and that's not to just immediately flush it and overlook the fact that Kansas blew a 4-point lead with the ball with 2 minutes to go when Frank Mason made an uncharacteristically bad alley-oop pass and Fee threw the ball away at the top of the circle, which led to a run out on the other end. I mean, these are things that you hope they learn from and certainly things you can't just, you know, chalk up to, well, Josh wasn't there, so, you know, they didn't make the right play because Josh wasn't on the floor. Now, you got to look at those as the mistakes that they were, but at the same time, if Josh was there in other parts of the game, Kansas absolutely wins, in my estimation, and here's why. I mean, one of the big factors in that game was they were out-rebounded by 5, and there were some second-chance buckets that TCU got, where if you've got your second-best rebounder in there, Josh Jackson, who averages close to 7 boards a game, you can't tell me he doesn't make a difference. Josh Jackson, had he been playing that day, probably means Steve Mikhailiuk wasn't on the floor for the final defensive play. And while Steve made a great block, he then fell on top of the Horned Frog shooter, which led to the game-winning free throws. You can't tell me that there's not some kind of difference made over the course of that game if Josh is there. I mean, to put it about as well as I've seen it written, Kansas, in the eyes of Mike DeCourcy, who's the national men's basketball beat writer for the Sporting News, Kansas has 2 of the top 6 players in the entire tournament playing for them this week and the next 3 weeks, we hope. And, Josh, a second-team All-American, confirms that. That means he's one of the best 10 players in the country. So clearly not having him versus TCU was huge and a big reason why they didn't win. So I flushed the results of that one. You hope that, there is some sting for the other guys in terms of late-game execution. Because I think Kansas have been so good at that, 10-2 in games decided by 6 points or less in the regular season. Hopefully, that's a lesson learned that sometimes not everything does go your way. You really have to value the ball on each and every possession because teams can come back and beat you if you don't. But beyond that, I mean, this was a Kansas team that wasn't playing whole, and they will be going forward. So I don't put a ton of stock in last Thursday.
Svi Mykhailiuk, you brought him up, and he had a nice offensive game against TCU, but he certainly has had some defensive breakdowns this year. And we know the one Iowa State where he admitted after the game, I blew it. I wasn't where I was supposed to be, and I should have had the 3-point shooter covered. And the play there at the end against TCU, and that's a tough one for me because – you know, a layup beats you, so you're going to protect the goal, and you'd rather have a guy shoot a 3 than a layup to beat you. But at the same time, he got sucked in a little too far, and that's why the guy had a look. And he made a great recovery, as you said, to make the block, but then, of course, he ran into him and fouled him. And I know the scouting report, it's been talked about even nationally, is that if you can get Svi in man-to-man situation, which KU normally plays man-to-man, is that you want to attack him off the dribble. How concerned is KU about the liability that Speed poses at times defensively?
Well, that's a pretty good breakdown, and I think he's improved a bit. But, yeah, I mean, there's still games you can point to where KU gets beat off the bounce because he's had a hard time moving his feet and staying in front of his man. And when you've got quick guard talent at spots 1 through 3, not just at the point guard position, you can get some isolation one-on-one matchups that are favorable if that's the Kansas defender in front of you. Now, that's not to say he's completely a liability. It's not like he's the bad cornerback that the other QB is throwing the ball at every single time. He's made some nice plays, and I think actually late in the season I was impressed with his ability to anticipate on defense, not on the man he's guarding, mm-hmm. but to get a hand in on deflection and be in the right place to start a run out going the other way. So I think there's some strong suits there too. But you're right to say that, you know, at times he's been susceptible to the dribble drive. And I think the other thing that you kind of throw out from that game versus TCU was Devontae Graham got beat off the bounce way more than we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
Why? Because he rolled his ankle and was playing through it and was not at 100% at all. And to your point about could it be a blessing in disguise, you know, he would have played the next day versus Iowa State. But I don't know if that would have been good for him. And so the fact that he didn't have to and now the ankle's good to go and ready to roll, I think that is a blessing in disguise. And so, you know, to your point about speed, though, it's clearly the biggest deficiency in his game. We all know what a great shooter he is. I think he's enhanced several aspects of his offensive game beyond simply the spot-up shooting. And I think defensively there are some things that are trending upward, but it's still a part of his game that you know, scouts are curious about how's that going to translate. And for a guy that, you know, will test the waters and see what his stock looks like here in the next couple of months, these are an important 3 weeks for him. And same goes for Devontae Graham, but that's probably the biggest question you have with him, I would say.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, his appearance every Thursday on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by the fine folks at Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by, see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or give them a ring at 738-5701. Okay, so let's look at the bracket here, and let's look at the Midwest region, Brian. KU has UC Davis, Jim Les, the head coach, UC Davis. He was the head coach at Bradley, who knocked off KU back in 06. That was 11 years ago. The game at 5:50 coming up on Friday. Quick thoughts on UC Davis.
Well, to be honest, I just watched it for the first time last night. It's kind of a weird situation from a team preparation and a play-by-play guy preparation standpoint. I put all my eggs in the basket of the second-round teams because I felt like those were going to be the more intriguing matchups, and I didn't want to, I hate to use the word waste, but I didn't want to waste 2 or 3 hours on a spotting board of either NC Central or UC Davis that I wasn't going to use. Now, I may wind up having done that with Michigan State or Miami, but I feel like that's preparation that will help me talk about that matchup on Friday with a lot of folks intrigued to Larrañaga versus Izzo and that kind of thing. So I'm really tearing into him for the first time today. Now, having said that, certainly was impressed last night with what I saw from Chima Maneki. And, Brinson Lamar has been their top scorer throughout the year. I think they've got, a nice 1-2 punch there. But, hey, the one seed is 128-0 for a reason. And I feel like Kansas' superior guard play, and even with a thinner front court, Kansas should have the ability to own the glass and light these guys up offensively enough that they win this thing fairly comfortably. That's not to say it's a pushover by any means, and I was really impressed because I think if anybody was diving deep into that first matchup, a lot of folks thought NC Central should win the game. And we saw, these guys come out there from the word go and really showed that they belong. So certainly impressed. And when you mentioned the Bradley 2006 factor, that has to, sting Kansas fans and ring loud and clear in their ears. So we'll see what the Aggies bring. But I think that my focus has been more on the rest of the region and the hopes that Kansas keeps on playing. And it's funny, I actually believe KU's biggest hurdle between here and Phoenix might be the Sweet 16, and so we can dive into that here in a little bit. And that's not to look past anything in the bottom half of the bracket involving Louisville and Oregon, but there's reasons why I think the third game out of six might be the toughest one in terms of getting to Phoenix, third game out of four prior to the Final Four. So maybe we can dive into that.
Yeah, before we get to that, let's go one step in between here. Miami and Michigan State, what – if KU plays Miami or if KU plays Michigan State, what problems would Which would be the better matchup, you think, for KU in the second round, assuming they get by UC Davis, of course? And then what problems would each team pose for Kansas?
Well, I think that both teams are certainly capable. And Bill Self feels like this is the toughest 8-9 draw that any of the one seeds got. Now, you could argue that Wisconsin was very much underseeded, and that's going to be a tough 8-9 matchup. But when you consider the tournament history and success, Tom Izzo with 7 Final Fours and 1 national title, Larrañaga's been to the Final Four before. With Miami, he's been to a couple of Sweet 16s. Clearly, he's going up against some coaching contemporaries that know how to win this time of year. Michigan State was a top 10 team in terms of talent in the preseason. Clearly, they haven't backed it up over the course of the year, and yet that kind of makes you a little bit worried that they had talent thought highly enough of to be considered elite, and they've got a coach who always seems to find a way, last year not included, to string it together in the postseason. But I think actually Miami's a team that scares me a little bit more. Now, I realize, Miles Bridges is a guy that we have to respect. Greg Gurley thinks he'll be a first-round draft pick, and here's a 17-point, 8-rebound-per-game type guy that leads the way for Michigan State. But Miami, having beaten both Carolina and Duke, Miami having been battle-tested in the toughest conference in the country, I just feel like that might be the tougher of the two. And I've even seen some national pundits picking Miami to pull the upset in the second round. And we obviously hope that's not the case. But I feel like with both of these matchups, and I know you could say this about any Kansas opponent when we start with the argument that KU has the best backcourt in the country, I realize that if you agree with me on that, they're going to have a backcourt edge against anybody. Mm-hmm. But I specifically feel like that there's some matchups to be had guard on guard with either of these teams that makes me feel good about Kansas. And so it's certainly going to be a challenge if they get to that point. But I think the Jayhawks will be okay. And I think Frank Mason in particular, who really did feel the sting of losing to TCU last week and made a comment that kind of inferred that, there was a letdown by one of their teammates by not playing that day. And I thought that was a right way for him to handle it regarding Josh. You don't go up and get in his face or anything. You don't do anything publicly. But he inferred that, they weren't whole, and that was, on one of his guys for not staying out of trouble. And I like the way he handled that. He's pushing the right buttons in a tactful way. Frank is a guy that, had he had 9 games in his postseason, might have had a chance to be one of the top 5 scorers all time. Not that he thinks about that or cares about that at all, but every one of these times putting on a Kansas uniform, as we've talked about, is sacred to him. And now he has zero margin for error. The next time they lose, he's done. And yeah. So I really feel like specifically these first 2 games, Frank wants another weekend. He wants 2 more weekends. And in a matchup in both backcourts where I think Kansas has the superior guard play, specifically on the ball, I think you're going to see the cream rise to the top, regardless of the second-round opponent.
You said a moment ago you're worried about the Sweet 16 matchup if KU gets that far, and that would be either Purdue or Iowa State, possibly Nevada. They're a dangerous team. Vermont, a 13 seed. I've heard a lot of people talk about Swanigan inside of Purdue. That caused a lot of problems for KU. But as you mentioned, KU would have a huge edge in the backcourt. And then, of course, there's Iowa State. KU and Iowa State at Sprint Center would be insane. Ticket prices will go through the roof. They already have to an extent. And if KU-Iowa State met a third time, Iowa State's certainly not going to back down after beating KU in Lawrence, although it took them 18 made three-pointers to get that done. So which one? You said Sweet 16. Are you saying either one of those teams would be really tough, or are you thinking one or the other is going to play KU in the Sweet 16?
Yeah, I'm thinking either one. And then I'm really glad you said what you said about the possibility that the higher seeds don't prevail, because – hey, man, the Catamounts haven't lost since Obama was still in the White House. So, I mean, you got to give them some love, too. It's been 86 days since they lost a game. So maybe Vermont pulls an upset. Maybe Nevada, with Marshall opposite of Morris in one of the better first-round guard matchups, pulls off a stunner. You never know. But if the higher seeds prevail, whether it's Purdue, who has, as much depth in the post, and obviously, as you mentioned, with the National Player of the Year candidate Caleb Swanigan is their best big. That was a team that 2 months ago, when we were first starting to turn the calendar and people would look around the rest of the country and say, okay, Kansas doesn't have Udoka Azubuike. All they've got is Landon Lucas and some questions behind him. Man, what team out there in other conferences scares you the most? Purdue was the first name off about every national analyst's lips that could give Kansas fits, and now here they sit potentially on a collision course. The good news is, you know, Landon's really solidified the first post position for Kansas. The four-guard lineup has worked well. You'd like to get a little bit more rebounding out of some of your other guards in that, but for the most part, that's worked well. And we've seen flashes out of Carlton and Dwight that make you think that in a one-game scenario, if Landon were to get into foul trouble or whatever, they could step up and give you a little bit more. Problem is with Purdue, you're not subbing those guys in just to spell Landon, and you may need them playing side-by-side in larger stretches to compete on the glass. And so you're going to need what we saw out of Dwight down in Austin. You're going to need what Carlton gave us two games of in the last 2 weeks of the regular season, but consistent in that matchup if it's Purdue. If it's Iowa State, I like it and I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because it took the greatest shooting game by a Kansas opponent in Jayhawk history to beat the Hawks and snap their 54-game home court winning streak when they hit 18-3, something only one other Kansas opponent had ever done and something no Kansas opponent in the field house had ever done. And that's the type of Herculean shooting effort it took. Now, having said that, you know, it was a close game up in Ames when they didn't hit 18 threes. And as you mentioned, there'll be a ton of Cyclone fans there, which is what concerns me, because that was a ticket in KC that we've been talking about for 8 months now. It was going to be gobbled up by every Kansas fan. And I think, you know, initially a lot of them have been. But Cyclone fans will find a way to make their presence felt. And all of a sudden, that's going to have a Big 12 title game feel to it with a spot in the Elite Eight on the line, much bigger stakes than just, you know, some hats you're going to wear for 2 weeks and then, you know, footnote on the game notes going forward that you want a Big 12 tournament. This is big boy ball if they make it there. And suddenly, not that it would be a split crowd by any means, but in the same way we call it Allen Fieldhouse East, they call it Hilton South,
mm-hmm.
and there will be a large contingent if they make it. And as we talk about guard play being the key to March, you know, they may have the best collection of perimeter players, you know, on this side of the bracket, maybe the best other than Kansas in the whole Midwest region. And I realize Oregon has Dylan Brooks, and Louisville's got talent all along the wing, but boy, Monte Morris, the fact that all the ISU guards are seniors and Deontay Burton is such a difficult matchup as a four that has some guard skills, that's a tough out right there. So I tell you what, that's not to look past what would lie next with an Oregon team or a Louisville team that clearly could still beat Kansas too. But I think the Sweet 16 might be the tougher of the two for the reasons I just mentioned. And Oregon, I'm still high on those guys, but they lose one of their best players to an ACL tear at Chris Boucher. He was averaging 12, 6, and 2 blocks a game, one of their best inside-outside guys. And then Louisville, I think it's a very talented team, very talented. But most analysts I've heard talk say that if there was one 2-seed that was maybe overseeded a little bit, it might be them. Now, they were still second in the nation in strength of schedule, seventh in the nation in RPI, which tells you maybe they were right where they should have been. But I don't know about you, Wade. I was glad to not see Duke on the two line in KU's region. And that's kind of where I'm coming from there. So, you know, it's one of those brackets you never want to say you like your bracket because it makes it sound like you think Kansas is just going to walk straight to the Final Four. But there were teams I was glad to see go elsewhere. And with a couple of exceptions, I was okay with who fell in front of KU in terms of the past here. But it's a very competitive region, and shoot, man, we may see a shakeup at the bottom of the Midwest with Oklahoma State making a run. You never know. But I do think you know, Kansas has a nice path in front of them if they can play to their optimal potential level.
I agree with you. Duke was the one team I didn't want to see in the bracket, and I thought they might be a two in KU's region. And Purdue concerns me a little bit. And the one thing about Iowa State, everybody talks about KU's going to be so comfortable in Kansas City at Sprint Center. Well, Iowa State will be too. There's no question about that. So that would be a scary matchup as well for KU. But you get a one-and-done tournament, every matchup to an extent can be scary. And the team that you don't think is going to do something to you ends up pushing you to the very limit. So we assume, since you're the voice of the Jayhawks, you got KU making it to the Final Four. Let me, and by the way, we had Kevin Kugler on earlier this week, the play-by-play guy of the NCAA tournament from Westwood One in the Final Four, and he has KU winning it all, which I'm scared because he says he always does poorly in his bracket and his champion never wins it. So I said, thanks for the jinx, Kevin. But who do you have in the Final Four? Who do you see coming out of the other three regions?
Man, honest to God, I haven't filled out a bracket for the first time in my life. And the reason is now that I work for KU internally, we can't do any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Can't even bet a beer on it. that's technically something of value that the NCAA would crack the whip on. So rather than tempt myself to wind up sending one in to a buddy, I just haven't filled one out. Having said that, I know the bracket pretty well, and I would tell you that had I picked the Final Four, certainly would have had Kansas in Phoenix, and I do have Kansas winning it all because I feel like, as we said, guard play being paramount and Kansas having the best guard, two of the best six players in the tournament, Self's most dynamic and talented freshman in terms of what he's actually done at KU. You could argue that Embiid's going to go on to bigger NBA success if he ever stays healthy, and Wiggins is already averaging 23 a game. But there's no doubt that the best freshman for the time he spent on the Kansas campus over these 14 Bill Self coach seasons, his best freshman is Josh Jackson. And I think he's going to come back motivated after letting his team down by not being there for the first-round game versus TCU, even more motivated than he would have been before. And if you agree with me that his biggest games have come on the biggest stages with the brightest lights, mm-hmm. whether it's Madison Square Garden, Rupp Arena, when the talent opposite of him has comparable height, he really rises to the occasion. And so I think there's going to be at least one game in this stretch where he just takes it over. And I think he's going to be a dynamic, game-changing talent that by the end of the next 3 weeks, folks can be pointing at him and saying, wow, this is a guy who's a budding superstar. So if you don't know about him already, I think this is really the coming out of his career party for Josh Jackson. But to me, it's Kansas, it's Arizona. I've got Duke and Carolina. And then I haven't looked past that as to who I would actually put Kansas opposite of in the title game. But those would be my final four. What's that, two twos and two ones? Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting stat. In the last 7 years, only 8 1 seeds in 7 years have made it to the Final Four. And we haven't seen a Pac-12 team in the Final Four since 08 when all the ones made it. UCLA was there.
Yeah.
So there's some interesting statistical trends that would work against the bracket I just gave you. But I do think Arizona gets there to represent the Pac-12, and I do think 2-1s get there. And how about the storylines there? If it's Self versus Williams in the Final Four, and then a shot at either Arizona or Duke in the title game, some of the true blue bloods in the history of Kansas or history of college basketball, that'd be pretty amazing.
I've got a bracket where I got Villanova, Arizona, UCLA, KU. I got KU against Villanova, a rematch of the Elite Eight for the national championship. How sweet would that be for payback?
Boy, that would be And let me tell you, there'd be so much motivation on the Kansas side after the way that one ended a year ago when Anna Lucas said on Sunday he thinks about that game all the time. And that's really fueled their fire throughout the offseason, the way things ended. So would love to see that come to fruition. And Josh Hart, Frank Mason going at it. I mean, that would be obviously an incredible matchup, too. So obviously we sit up here and we pick chalk a lot, and there's going to be one surprise in there, you would think. I don't know where it's going to come from. But I take either your Final Four or mine. Your ratings would probably be about as good as they've been in a while if you had those type of teams, blue bloods prevailing.
Okay, time for off-the-wall question. Tomorrow's St. Patty's Day, as you're probably well aware of. And it kind of ties together my off-the-wall question because when I was in college, St. Patty's Day was a huge deal. We had a great time, and we did everything. I think everything was legal that we did, as far as I know. But we always tended to have a prank or two that would occur on St. Patty's Day, whether I was a victim of a prank or whether I was part of guys pulling pranks on other people. So my question to you, and I'll give you a chance to think about it for a second, what is the best prank you've been involved in, whether you were the victim of the prank or whether you were the guy guilty of pulling the prank? For me, it was, I shared the story earlier today on the show, is that we're talking about blinker fluid for some reason. It came up. People don't use their blinkers. We mentioned blinker fluid. We had a girl that was very flighty. She's very smart, but flighty. And we went to C-Mart, and she said her blinker wasn't working anymore. We told her, hey, it's simple. You just got to go to C-Mart, get some blinker fluid. It's right next to the windshield wiper fluid. We go into C-Mart, and of course, what do you know, Brian? What are the odds? No blinker fluid at all inside C-Mart. And so we said, well, they must be out. We told her to go to the front desk and ask the cashier that if they had any in the back or if they had any that they're ordering that they'd have in a week or two. And then we sat back and enjoyed the show as we were at the pop machine. She goes up there, so naive, and asked the clerk the exact question, do you happen to have any more blinker fluid in the back or could you order some? My blinker's not working. And we just lost it. And the cashier played along, Brian, because he looked over at us. We were kind of giggling, and she was oblivious. And he said, He said, we should get some in next week. It was just fun. We had a great time. It was innocent, nothing illegal. What about you? You've been a part of a prank that you remember?
Yeah, probably a couple. I wouldn't want you putting on the podcast.
Yeah, I figured so.
but man, that's pretty good. You know, one of the better ones that happened at my family's expense was by a Wildcat fan who was a close family friend, and K-State had beaten KU in football back in the 90s, and that obviously happens more than we'd like it to. But on this particular time, he and my dad had wagered lunch on the game. And so while they were out having lunch, he said he was sneaking off to the bathroom, and he actually went out to the parking lot, and on the front of my dad's Ford Explorer, he screwed in a Powercat K-State license plate.
Mm.
And if you think about it, If all you typically park in is your garage and the same parking space every day at work where you don't face the front of your car, you might not realize what's on the front of your car. You might drive around with a Powercat as a very, you know, well-known Jayhawk fan amongst your friends for 3 weeks before somebody points out that what in the heck are you driving around on the front of your car with there? And it wasn't until about 3 weeks later when my dad came to pick me up from school, and he was sitting in the Circle Drive at Topeka West trying to pick me up, and I didn't walk to his car because I didn't think it was him. There was this green Ford Explorer with a Powercat on the front, and we sat there just both, you know, waiting on the other person for a good 15 minutes before I finally looked closer and realized it was him, and then we come to find out, oh, my gosh, he's been driving around with us for 3 weeks. So that was a pretty crafty move on my Wildcat buddy's part. Tell you what, last night we were down here in Tulsa, and Greg Gurley and I met up with some friends, as I mentioned, one of Bill Self's close childhood friends, and we were socializing with them a little bit, and the place we were at happened to be doing karaoke, and so I paid the DJ $5 to put Greg Gurley's name in lights, and I was going to have him sing Macho Man by the Village People, and he totally didn't want to sing at all. And so the guy on the PA is like, and everybody welcome to the stage, Greg Gurley is going to treat us to Macho Man, you know. Unfortunately, even with the peer pressure, he did not go up there to sing it. So some of my pranks haven't worked as well as yours did, even though I had the best intentions with that one last time.
Gurley doing karaoke and Macho Man in those red pants, that would have been classic, man. You have to throw that on YouTube right away. No wonder he didn't do it.
No kidding. Exactly.
Blackmail for life. Hey, man, have fun calling the game and hopefully many games here in the NCAA tournament. And next week, hopefully, we're talking to you and previewing the Sweet 16 from Kansas City.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan. Let's do it. And thanks again for all your coverage throughout the year. Hopefully, we've got 3 full weeks and a little bit of spring football talk on the flip side as well. But after 6 months of reports, these next 3 weeks should be our most exciting ones. So let's hope we get them. Thanks a lot, bud.
Sounds like a plan. Talk to you next week. It's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks here on the Sports Ticket every Thursday. And brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency, Farm, Home, Auto, Life, and Crop Insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 785-738-5701.